Support for 89.7 comes from the Sherrington Group, financial planners, investment managers, providing financial advice and client-focused solutions to help grow and preserve clients' wealth. The Sherrington Group, planning for success, managing for life at sherringtongroup.com.
Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The recession has slowed, but in August, the U.S. Department of Agriculture reported that the recession-fueled demand for food stamps has endured, and the amount of money the federal government spends to help those households that use food stamps, now called the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, has more than doubled. Federal Republican lawmakers have responded with plans to splinter off the SNAP benefits from the Farm Bill and cut those benefits by an estimated $40 billion. Joining us now to catch up on the Farm Bill and SNAP is Derek Wallbank. He is a Capitol Hill reporter for Bloomberg News. Welcome to the show, Derek.
Oh, thank you for having me.
In April 2009, the SNAP benefits were amended to help people affected by the recession. They increased the benefits, but those increases are expected to expire on November 1st. Is that what we're talking about with the Farm Bill, or is it $40 billion more?
Well, those are part of the math right now until that expiration actually happens. It's a little bit of a cheat in some of the math, but those expirations are looking like they're coming. We haven't seen any real legislation to push those off, and so far everyone's preparing for those to take effect. The thing that we're talking about with the Farm Bill, though, is cuts beyond that. Cuts to Farm Bill and or cuts to food stamps from eligibility. Because that's really the way that you have to cut this. When you're talking about we want to cut X billion dollars from the Farm Bill, what you're talking about really is you're saying we want to cut eligibility in some way, and then that in turn becomes a cut of a certain level.
Have they actually split the bills yet?
Yes, in the House they have.
Okay.
The House tried to pass one that was comprehensive, that had the farm and the food together, and that failed on the floor. It was kind of a shock vote. And so House Republican leaders went and passed a second bill with only Republican votes that did not have any nutrition programs in it at all. And they said that sometime in September they would bring up a second bill that is only nutrition programs, which usually referred to as food stamps, and that one would have $40 billion in cuts over 10 years. The previous effort they tried had about $20.5 billion in cuts. So this is roughly double what they tried last time.
And has that second bill been introduced yet?
No.
Okay.
It has not been introduced. We don't have text of it yet. Theoretically, it was supposed to happen sometime in September. I say theoretically because we've got the schedule for week one, and it's not on there. We don't have the schedule for week two, but it's not on there yet. and then you have one more day, Monday the 30th, because they're taking a week off in between. So maybe, but the whole serious, and I hate to say it like that, but the whole serious thing is really has put a lot of things on hold. So we'll see if the September plan holds with this.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about upcoming food stamp cuts that are scheduled for November 1st, and then an additional proposed $40 billion in food stamp cuts, which would be accomplished through tightening up eligibility requirements. My guest is Derek Wallbank. He's a Capitol Hill reporter for Bloomberg News. If you have a question or comment about the Farm Bill or the food stamp issue as it stands legislatively, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. The Farm and SNAP Bill, or the Farm Bill, together with the food stamp element, traditionally has been a way to get sweeping agreement from usually disparate interests, you know, namely the urban centers and the rural outposts. Will splitting the bill up affect the Farm Bill going down the road?
Well, and you're really talking about a coalition that's held together at least since the 70s and even a little bit before when it was horse trading for one bill versus the other. They were combined in they've been combined since the 1970s. And that gets you urban votes for rural farm subsidies and rural votes for food stamps and nutrition aid programs that you might not have otherwise. So it's been a coalition that's worked. The House is betting that you can do it without that right now, although from what I'm hearing from most folks, most people are saying this that even if the House does this, they're going to look to combine it when they go to conference with the Senate, because the Senate's already passed the farm bill that had the food and the farms together. So it may not be all done on that side, but certainly splitting this up came as a bit of a shock to a lot of people. It was something that was thought unthinkable, and then it got thought.
And then in the Senate version, is that the $20 billion cut or the $40 billion cut or none at all?
Oh, Senate's actually just about four.
Okay.
There's three numbers here. There's four, which is the Senate's bill. There's 20.5, which is the first one the House tried. And then there's 40, which is the one that they're going to try now. So basically what you're going to be sitting with is if they can get the votes for this, you're going to have on one side the Senate at $4 billion in cuts, which is through a small change to a little bitty eligibility requirement, and the House with $40 billion in cuts, the option for states to have work requirements required for food stamps and drug testing and taking aim at eligibility for what's known as able-bodied adults between 18 and 50 without dependents. It's not only a difference in amount and how you qualify. The House one is a lot more restrictive on who can get it and what they can do with it. It's also important to note, Anna, that in the Senate one, they also have restrictions on things like college students using food stamps when they're fine, but by a technical description because they're technically independent from their parents. You get food stamps there, or lottery winners. You've seen in Michigan where somebody hit a jackpot and continued to collect food stamps for a little bit of time. It's rare, but it has happened, and it's been one of the examples that people have cited and said this needs to be reformed. Both of them would do things like that.
I mentioned earlier that the spending on food stamps has basically doubled, mostly driven by the recession, the Great Recession. Is the Republican opposition or problems with food stamp benefits just because they're spending too much money, or is it fueled by something else?
Well, I think Republicans have traditionally been a party who have cast a fairly skeptical eye on federal benefit schemes. And I think there's a lot of that playing into it, but there certainly is a lot of Republican desire to get funding for things below its 2008 level. There was a lot of increases with the stimulus, as you rightly mentioned, where federal funding shot up a bit to try and pump more money into the economy. And there's been a lot of Republican call for pulling back on all of that and saying, right, we're technically out of the recession now, unemployment is going down. Let's pull back on that. Let's get our spending more under control. And Republicans point to a debt issue and say, well, we might be having to raise the debt limit in a month maybe or something in that window. We need to focus on overall spending levels. And that's been an argument that they've made for quite some time now.
Jeff in Columbus, you're on the air with Derek Wallbank of Bloomberg News. Welcome, Jeff.
Thank you, Ann. Just wanted to give a comment here because this particular situation actually does affect me.
Okay.
Because my wife and I, we do receive SNAP assistance. And there's been talk as far as with these cuts are concerned that for a family of four, that's going to be $30 less a month in food. And depending on how you shop, that $30 isn't really going to affect you. Like with my wife and I, a couple months ago, we went shopping. We spent practically everything that was on the card, and we received a little over $500 in assistance. And but we bought food. We have a deep freeze. We bought the meat and everything, and that lasted us. Mm-hmm. I didn't see the bottom of the freezer for almost 2 months.
Well, let's talk about, when you're talking about the cuts that you're going to be grappling with, Jeff, are you talking about the planned cut, the scheduled cuts for November 1st?
Yes.
Okay. Now, do you work?
Yes, I do. I'm actually at work right
okay.
now.
So the proposed $40 billion of cuts in the House bill, Derek Wallbank, that wouldn't necessarily affect Jeff because it mostly targets people who are able-bodied and not working.
Yeah, and people who get things based on whether or not they pay utilities and get them off of other programs that they also qualify for. Yeah, so it may not affect Jeff, but this cut that's coming up because of the end of some of these stimulus benefits, mm-hmm. that certainly would. And you know, Jeff, you make a really good point about that. You sit there and you try and budget for this sort of stuff, and it is actually a real cut. I mean, it's a sort of seen inside the Beltway sometimes as an academic number exercise of let's pull this down, but there really are real people at the other end of it who say, well, you know, goodness, that's actually real money. I know when, you know, I have two little girls, and I know exactly the cost of a gallon of milk at every single grocery store in a 5 mile radius from my house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, mm-hmm. and we watch which one's on sale where. So mm-hmm. yeah, it really affects real people.
Not everybody has a deep freeze, though. That's a big difference.
I would like one myself.
Yes.
I really would. But,
okay.
but it's true. No, it's, and there are a lot of people. You know, the food stamp program isn't. It's not excessive. People have questions about how generous it is, but it's not. You know, it's not crazy excessive. You're not going to go out there and be able to get, you know, Pat LaFrieda meat or Kobe beef off of this. It's not that kind of program.
Well, Jeff in Columbus, thanks a lot for your call. I have one more story. A lot of Republican lawmakers who support these cuts in food stamp benefits represent large constituencies that depend on them. So this isn't as if it doesn't matter. It's not as much of an urban versus rural issue as it used to be. A lot of the highest percentages of food stamp usage is in rural areas.
It really is. And, you know, there's a lot of economic strain that's been going on in Appalachia and in rural America, and those areas are predominantly represented by Republicans. And there have been people at town halls this August who have talked to the Republican lawmakers and said, look, you know, this is my family, this is me, this isn't, you know, someone way off,
mm-hmm.
but this is one of those things where you say, as somebody who wants to cut spending, well, the economy begins at home. If we're going to cut, it's going to be a cut. And there are people who rely on it right now, and there's just no way that you can cut at numbers like we're talking about without people actually being affected. You know, so a lot of people talk in Washington about let's get rid of waste, fraud, and abuse. Well, you know, that's nice. But at the end of the day, with cuts this size, you're not just going after waste, fraud, and abuse. You're saying we're making a value judgment, and our value judgment is it is worth cutting this money. It is worth not spending it as we're spending it right now. And there are people who are affected by that decision.
Speaking of fraud, waste, and abuse, we're going to be talking with the Undersecretary for Food, Nutrition, and Consumer Services from the USDA later on in the hour. For now, I want to say thank you so much to Derek Wallbank. Thanks for joining us, Derek.
Thank you very much for having me.
Derek Wallbank, he is a Capitol Hill reporter for Bloomberg News. Coming up, we're going to hear from the Mid-Ohio Food Bank about how they plan to cope with the upcoming increased demand, most likely for their services. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Thank you. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Republicans in the U.S. House are planning $40 billion in cuts to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, what most of us know as food stamps. Joining us now to talk about the impact locally is Marilyn Tomasi of the Mid-Ohio Food Bank. Welcome to the show, Marilyn.
It's a privilege, Ann. Thank you.
So it's Hunger Action Month. There's the SNAP challenge out there, how to live on $4.50 a day. How to live on $4.50 a day in food allowance. First, let's talk about food insecurity and what does that really mean. I've talked about it before. I'm not sure the phrase does justice to what it means. So tell us once again, food insecurity.
Food insecurity, Ann, really means that, in simple terms, that an individual does not know where their next meal will come from. Because of the economic recession and what has happened in the country over the last few years, we now have low food insecurity, which means that not only do people not know where their next meal is coming from, but they, when they do get a meal, they're either skipping it or reducing portions so they can spread it amongst their family.
It has been reported that 850,000 households in Ohio would be affected by these proposed cuts. What kind of households are we talking about? Because we're not talking about across-the-board cuts. They're cuts that are achieved by tightening restrictions or regulations or who gets them.
Well, first, Ian, let me say that the face of hunger is changing. So it is people from all strata of life. It is people in the suburbs. We know that in the last couple of years, hunger has absolutely exploded in the suburbs, that we now have pantries in Dublin, in Westerville, in New Albany, in Worthington, and in all of our suburbs. And yes, it is also the people who have lost their house and they are living on the streets. So hunger is impacting everyone. And we're seeing that it's on the rise. Ohio is now 10th in the country in terms of hunger and poverty. And in fact, we were actually the third highest in terms of food insecurity increases.
The economy is getting better. Ohio has been held up as a paragon of economic virtue. How can it be that it ranks so high in such a wrong way?
You know, because we're not there yet. People are still struggling, and there's a lot of residual for folks who have lost jobs and are trying to catch up and have exhausted all of their assets. I mean, we know that 40% of the people who use pantries in Mid-Ohio Food Bank's network, these folks work. They are trying to do the right thing. They are trying to take care of their family, but they can't earn a living wage, or they may work two or three jobs and not qualify for health care.
But those folks, besides the scheduled November 1st cut that has to do with the planned cut already, those folks, the working people, aren't going to be harmed by these proposed $40 billion in cuts. This is people who don't work, who aren't in a training program.
Actually, the $40 billion cut will absolutely devastate this economy because it will put more demand on charities to provide more food when they are already stretched to the limit. You know, hunger is a national problem requiring a national solution. So we need to come together, charities, government, and not-for-profit, to figure out how we can help everyone in our community thrive. It affects us all.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Marilyn Tomasi of the Mid-Ohio Food Bank, where she's Vice President of Communications. If you have a question or comment, want to talk about your experience with food stamps and SNAP benefits, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also check out our Facebook page and post your question or your comment there. So how many people would be affected locally, as far as we know at this point, if those proposed cuts in the House version were to be enacted?
I think we're still trying to figure that out. We know the cuts will be catastrophic. We are trying to figure out with the waiver that the state now has decided not to pursue for able-bodied adults ages 18 to 50 without dependents.
Which they technically, the state still could pursue that waiver, but the state's preemptively not doing it.
Correct. They're not doing it in 72 counties. 16 counties in Ohio will still qualify for the waiver because of their high unemployment rates. So we know at least 15,000 to 25,000 Franklin County people who receive SNAP will be affected, which means we need about 15,000 to 25,000 jobs or job training programs to make sure that they can get food on the table.
And do you know if the House bill includes funding for those training programs?
I'm not sure. I don't believe it does. I think that as part of this small band of congressional reps who are attempting to get this $40 billion cut through, I believe it's straight out cuts.
Are children in danger of losing food benefits? If we're talking about able-bodied adults who are neither working at least 20 hours a week, nor in a training program at least 20 hours a week. Those are the ones that would be affected by this. It wouldn't affect children, too, would it? Would they still be getting benefits for their children?
Well, we now have about 1 in 4 children in Ohio who is struggling with hunger. So in terms of the federal waiver, those are for able-bodied adults without children. But with the SNAP cuts, yes, that would significantly cut benefits for children as well. Because when you reduce the overall contribution for SNAP, then you are reducing all families.
How do you see that affecting what the Mid-Ohio Food Bank does? What, in terms of resources, what do you have to generate now? How are you figuring that, what you'll have to generate to make up the difference?
Well, we know that about 2 million Ohioans receive SNAP benefits. And we know that if those benefits are cut, that the demand on us and our 550 charities throughout 20 counties, the demand for more food will be there. And we are sourcing food. In fact, 52% of our inventory now is all fresh food. And 37% is fruits and vegetables. So we are sourcing food every single day. But we are still falling short to meet the demand that we have in the rising hunger in our community.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about upcoming cuts in food stamp benefits. Questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Joe, you're on the air. Welcome, Joe.
Hi, Ann. Great show. I am one of the co-chairpersons for this year's Zombie Walk Columbus. The 7th annual Zombie Walk will be this Saturday, starting at 4:30 p.m. at COSI, and it's all for the benefit of the Mid-Ohio Food Bank. We encourage all participants to show up in their best zombie attire, but more importantly, please bring canned goods, non-perishable goods. We'll be accepting donations 4:30 to 5:30, and then the walk will start at 5:30.
And where does the walk go?
It will start in COSI. We will go across the Rich Street Bridge heading east. Into downtown Columbus. We'll go south on Civic Center Drive, and then we'll turn right and head west across the Main Street Bridge back into Franklinton. So it's quite the visual. If you could see thousands of zombies coming across that bridge into downtown Columbus, think World War C, but the C doesn't stand for Columbus. It stands for canned goods.
Okay. Joe, thanks a lot for the call. We'll try to get a link and post it on our website at WOSU.org/allsides.
And
thank you so much.
Thanks, Joe, for your support.
Yes, ma'am. You're welcome.
Once again, 614-292-8513 is the number to call. Beth in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Beth.
Hi. I just wanted to ask, what can we do besides call our senators and congressmen? Is there anything that's going to be, any rallies or anything going to be held in Columbus? And I'm just going to I'm going to listen to what you have to say right now.
Okay. Thanks, Beth.
Okay, bye.
Thanks so much, Beth, for that question. Well, first of all, I mean, you're right. We need to be in touch with our congressional reps and senators and remind them. Perhaps we can encourage them to take the SNAP challenge, which is living on a SNAP budget for 1 week, which is about $1.46 per meal. I think that would give them real insight in terms of how folks are not getting an overabundance of funds for food. Second of all, the food bank, for every dollar donated, we can generate about $11 in groceries. So we would encourage people to volunteer, to donate, to advocate. And finally, we would encourage people to go to MidOhioFoodBank.org and sign up for the Food Bank Advocacy Network. It's called FAN, and we will alert you when there are various events going on, when an activity has happened in D.C. or at the state level, so we can try to mobilize people and get action. Oops. Hi, Mike in Columbus. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Ann. Great show. Thanks for taking my call.
Hey,
I have a question, and it's kind of common sense to me. I mean, how are people allowed to buy stuff like Red Bull, Doritos, small things of water, which I don't even treat myself to because I pay out of my own pocket? And, I mean, I really think there should be some kind of reform. They could make huge cuts there. I mean, can't they set up, you know, like I mean, can't UPS deliver, like, staple goods, beans, rice? I mean, it seems common sense to me. I mean, what are they thinking in Washington?
Well, it's a good question, and they are talking about limiting what people can buy with their benefits, and they have talked about that for a long time. But, Marilyn Tomasi, maybe you can address that. Why is it that people can buy junk food and buy expensively packaged drinks and that sort of thing?
Well, first of all, you know, we need to remember that. I mean, we too do not want fraud in the system, because anytime there is fraud, then they are taking away from the benefits of those people who really need it. And we do know that there is less than 2% fraud and trafficking in the food stamp or SNAP system. But I can share with you, Mike, that those who are on SNAP in Ohio, about 12.5% spend on dairy. 35% of the SNAP benefit goes toward meats, 20% toward fruits and vegetables, and about 20% for breads. So the majority of the SNAP benefit is going toward fresh food. And I also might add that you cannot purchase any non-food items like diapers. And that is a huge issue for families with young children.
Because for some people, it's a choice between diapers and food.
Exactly. Mm. Just like medication and food, utilities and food, shelter and food. Mm. And, you know, Anne, food is our most basic need. And to make those choices is unconscionable.
Mike, thanks a lot for your call. Dennis and Marion, you're on the air with Marilyn Tomasi of the Mid-Ohio Food Bank. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, how are you? I just got one burning thought, and it has little to do with the minutia of how this thing's run. It's the fact that we are mechanizing businesses now. I just saw a piece on PBS the other day with robotics. They're not hiring people. There's a glut of money. And, you know, it just seems like this is a form, in a reality, a form of subsidizing businesses. if you can follow my thinking.
Well, yes, I can, because we've heard about how Walmart was working to sign up its employees for food stamps. So I think that's what Dennis is getting at. Marilyn Tomasi, any thoughts about that? Is that helpful?
Dennis, thank you so much for sort of bringing this into the conversation, because, you know, a lot of people don't look at it that way. But when we talk about folks who are working and not able to earn a decent, sustainable wage, then we are, in fact, supporting those employees with SNAP, with other kinds of benefits offered by the federal and state governments. So if we could encourage employers to pay the living wage, then those benefits would go drastically down.
All right, Dennis, thanks a lot for that call. I want to get to another one. Samantha in Lisbon, welcome.
Good morning, Anne. Thank you very much. I have a question about why the state of Ohio does not consider bills toward a home and recognize that as a bill you have to pay out. I get food stamps. I'm on disability, $700 a month. I have twin boys that are 13, growing appetites, of course, and we get enough to have about $50 a month, or I'm sorry, a week in food stamps. My mom bought me a home. It was for $1,000, but I owe her about $16,000, paying her $200 a month. And they say, oh, that's just something you have to pay back. That doesn't count, so you get more food stamps. And we can hardly survive. I literally cannot get out and work. And I wondered why the state didn't recognize this in their rules, although they make lots of money.
Marilyn, I don't know if you can answer that or not.
You know, we're still struggling every day with what some of those rules are and how public policymakers got to those rules. And we do know that, you know, to receive food stamps, you need to be at 130% the poverty level. And for many, that just isn't enough. You know, SNAP does not get food on the table all month long. When you are paying $200 a month on rent, or you are paying for medication, or you have growing children, that you just can't make it on what you receive on SNAP, which is why our network of 550 pantries and soup kitchens, after school sites, senior sites, why they are flooded with people.
All right, Samantha, thanks a lot. I want to grab one more quick one. Michael in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. My question is, why is the state of Ohio non-compliant as far as SSDI mandates federally that we work 20 to 25 hours a week? Because I find that that would alleviate a lot in the system, because they're paying $160 or $70 for my Medicare deductible every year, plus they're subsidizing my Medicare Part D.
Okay.
I wish there was something that could be done about that.
All right. Well, we're talking about food stamps right now. Are you talking about food stamps, Michael?
Yes, because under the SNAP program,
right,
I would come up off of it and that would allow others in need to participate. That would allow others in need to participate if they were compliant on that level.
Well, the state was granted a waiver on the work requirements, and now is not going to request that waiver anymore for 72 counties, and in 16 counties they want to keep the waiver. But that's a waiver that they requested after because of the recession and the impact on people. But Michael, I'm sorry I can't answer all the other questions, and I don't know, Marilyn, if you can pitch in or not. We are going to be back in just a minute with Kevin Concannon. He is Undersecretary for Food, Nutrition, and Consumer Services at the USDA. When we return, we're going to talk a little bit about fraud in the program and what the federal government is doing about it, what the state government can do about it, maybe what you can do about it. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. As the demand for food stamps by low-income American households grew during the Great Recession, so did the amount of fraud associated with the benefit, now called the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. Some have said that the sheer size of the program has brought in inefficiencies that invite more fraud. But a recent report from the United States Department of Agriculture says that the fraud rate of 1.3% is less than half the rate 30 years ago. That's with the program operating at a record high. Joining us now to explain the patterns of fraud, how they relate to growth or not, and how they could be stopped is Kevin Concannon. He's Undersecretary for Food, Nutrition, and Consumer Services for the USDA. Welcome to the show, Kevin.
Happy to be here.
So SNAP is operating at a record level right now, given the impact of the recession. Has the level of fraud increased at the same rate?
Well, actually, as you pointed out, the latest report that we just released here within the last few weeks shows that the fraud rate, the rate of trafficking or misuse of benefits in the program is 1.3%. That's considerably lower than for much of the life of the food stamp program. The trafficking rate ran in the 4%, about four times or three times that rate, I should say. It has gone up slightly in the last couple of years in terms of that percentage. Previously, the fraud rate, including everything from stores that were conspiring to, you know, buy benefits and cash them out with recipients, to people showing up in the parking lot of a supermarket and saying, "I'll use my benefits if you will give me cash for that product." That 1.3% rate includes all of those misuses, as well as stores that would allow someone to purchase a non-food item with their SNAP benefits. We take a number of steps to really pursue that. We don't tolerate it. We certainly don't like it. We make that unambiguously clear. But we found that one of the biggest changes that came about in reducing fraud was the introduction of electronic benefits, the plastic cards, not unlike a credit card across the country. And for the first few years in the use of those cards, that rate hovered at the clearly 1% rate. Over the last couple of years, as the program grew larger in terms of its reach across the country, one of the aspects of it that grew as well was the number of stores that are legally authorized to process the benefits. And that number of stores is now 245,000. Many of the stores that came into the program in recent years are small stores, and those small stores are invariably where more than 95% of the fraud occurs.
Why is that?
Well, I think part of that, one, supermarket chains are not going to risk losing their ability to process these benefits, because SNAP or food stamp benefits are a major part of business for large supermarkets. They tend to have more rigorous training programs. They're just not going to risk this. Whereas in small stores, it may be small owners, it may be an employee that's less well-trained, it may be that those small stores don't have the electronic, the barcode readers that are universally available in large stores. So it may be where in neighborhoods, in certain neighborhoods where the practice has grown up, where you get, we see this as we look at the country, fraud tends to occur in some states more than others, in some neighborhoods, rural or urban, more than others. And we are getting better ourselves through the use of electronic data mining. That's the principal source of where we're able to uncover trafficking or fraud in the program. And we go after both the stores. We now typically each year now take out about 2,500 stores. But currently we have proposals to strengthen the food requirements for corner stores. It always distresses me, and it distressed me one of the trips up to Ohio when I'm pulling out of the airport. Here I looked across and saw a big sign, EBT, and then tobacco and alcohol on the same sign. And to me, I firmly support increasing the requirements for the food groups that stores would have to stock in order to stay in the program, because we've seen, one, the quality food is a challenge in many of those small stores for low-income households, but also there seems to be this relationship, this temptation. Now, I want to say that the majority of stores play by the rules, mm-hmm. just like the vast majority of people enrolled in the program play by the rules. It's that small number of folks who conspire to misuse the program that we need to make sure we're doing as much as we can to suppress.
Kevin Concannon, what is the risk to a store if they commit fraud? It's not necessarily a criminal offense, right? They pay fines or they get kicked out of the program, but no one goes to jail, do they?
Well, they do go to jail on the big items, but typically what happens is they are removed from the program and removed from the program for a lifetime. In other words, we have the authority to say, you've been trafficking, you're out for good, not out for a year or 2 years, you're out for good. And we've been strengthening the requirements, so now the frequency at which we reauthorize, particularly stores where in geographic locations where we've had problems in the past, or small stores, we're looking for a lot more documentation on who truly owns the store, what the history is. But there are criminal prosecutions that you read of in the papers, but they are typically the larger conspiracies, basically, where somebody conspired to collect thousands of dollars, or tens or even hundreds of thousands in a few cases, and they are criminally prosecuted. But the short term, and my approach to it has been both, let's go after the stores, but let's also make sure there is a sanction for the consumers who have cooperated with those stores in trafficking.
Fox News has invested a lot in getting out the story of the unemployed California surfer who spent his benefits on lobster. Can you talk about that a little bit? I'm just going to take a leap here. That's not typical, of course, but what does it mean?
Well, you know, that's a very troubling. That's sort of like the lottery winner up in the Midwest here a year or two ago. That one very rare exception came to be used by those who don't like the program to begin with to try to mischaracterize and make the public believe that this is very commonly the case. That is the same characterization I would make of that surfer out in California. Very frustrating to me that he would sort of arrogantly say, "Hey, dude, I'm surfing today," or whatever his words were.
Mm-hmm.
He certainly on the surface looked like a very able-bodied person. And unfortunately, short-term, if all the facts as presented were true, he is covered by the waiver the state of California has for single adults without children. But certainly from a principled point of view, he should be out there. And I worry that maybe part of that display was an effort to just draw attention to his band or his so-called occupation of the one he aspires to.
That's right. He's a musician.
Yeah.
You talked about data mining, but even to watch and look for fraud. But even data mining requires people to do that. You need, it isn't free. Is there enough funding for oversight?
Well, we have about 100 people spread across the country. They don't do data mining. They are the folks who do the undercover buys and who observe stores. So we do rely upon that, and we are locating them increasingly where the activity is. There are some states that, again, it is the rarest occasion where we have fraud issues, where there are other locations where it occurs, even when store ownership changes. So we're better at where we locate those 100 persons. But the identification far more typically is through the data mining. That's why we've entered into additional relationships with states like Ohio and three others where we're sharing more of the data directly from them to us, and we're having our experts nationally who do data mining for some of the major federal criminal agencies as well as Social Security and some other, you know, important programs to say what's suspicious in this particular pattern. And typically what we'd look for is say, why is a store of that size in that location doing this volume, for example, of food stamp benefits? Or why are the redemptions that are occurring in that store coming from households that don't live right around the corner? So there are ways to identify it, and we're getting much better at it. And these are outside contracted expert organizations that we've hired. And we, as I say, are very committed. But we've also been encouraging states to change some of their practices along this line as well. An example of that would be households that receive multiple plastic cards over the course of the year. It's certainly possible a homeless person or somebody with serious mental illness could be losing their cards or needing to have those cards replaced. But when we see households that are requesting multiple cards, it raises an alert for us to say what's going on here. And we just issued a public notice and a regulation that gives states more authority to call that household in to say what's going on here. And I found, like when I was out in Washington State this past week, a week ago, Washington State, for example, after a certain number of cards are issued to a household, they imprint on the next cards the names of that household. Now, their purpose in doing that, again, is to make it more difficult for these cards to be passed along or sold to a store.
Okay, so that's what's happening, is the cards themselves are being sold and then reported lost or something like that.
Correct.
If an individual is caught doing that, do they lose SNAP benefits for life?
They can appear on our list of being permanently taken out of the program. And last year, about 800,000 persons across the country, it was a little less than that, 700,000+, were individually reviewed, and 40-some-odd thousand were taken out of the program, period. You're out for doing that. So we've been urging states to make sure they put it in heavy black letters when people apply for the program, apprising them of the fact that if you misuse the program or traffic in it, one, it's a criminal offense, and two, you could be out for life, or worse, you could go to jail.
And as far as going back to the fraud rate of 1.3%, how does that stack up against other large government programs? Do you have any idea? Do you compare those things?
It is one of the lowest rates. You know, I was a state health and human service commissioner for 25 years in three states, and it is one of the lowest rates of fraud compared to, for example, Medicaid fraud, where the difference is that most Medicaid fraud occurs on the provider side, and the public isn't as mindful or aware of it. They may read about it from time to time, but they don't see it. Whereas the experience of going to a supermarket and seeing somebody ahead of you perhaps using a card that looks like a SNAP card reminds you that millions of Americans are reliant upon this program, and especially in this economy, thankfully it's there for them. And but the issue of fraud, even the Inspector General here at the USDA just released a report just within the last week or so on more traditional agriculture programs. And we got high marks in terms of the food and nutrition side of that report, saying, we have taken steps to make sure that people who get onto the program are who they say they are. We work very strongly with states.
Kevin Concannon, I'm sorry, we have to call it there. Undersecretary for Food, Nutrition, and Consumer Services at the USDA, and also Marilyn Tomasi at the Mid-Ohio Food Bank. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 MBR News.